face it, winter can wreak havoc on your parking lot. And the last thing your customers need is to dodge potholes, which might make them dodge your business altogether. Make sure they don't have bumps on the way to your door by calling U.S. Pavement. 1-800-PAVEMENT. Let U.S. Pavement smooth the road to your door. U.S. Pavement has paved the way for successful businesses all over New England since 1985. Call now, and a member of their expert team will evaluate your site and give you a price that won't leave a hole in your budget. Call U.S. Pavement at 1-800-PAVEMENT or visit uspavement.com.
B-Pod Studios.
This is Felger.
Felgstradamus.
En masse.
You're not going to get anybody half decent for free.
Presented by DraftKings on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
All right, 4:02 in the afternoon, the Patriots released their new uniforms. I'm sure you've seen them. I'll have Vinny on the simulcast queue up the video here in a second. But first of all, the home uniforms, the blue on blue, those are their color rush to a T?
Yeah.
Exactly?
Yep.
Huh. So there's no tweak to them?
No, not to my knowledge. I mean, they look exactly the same as what they've worn those last couple of years when they've worn them on the Thursday night or when they decide to wear them. It's that Captain America look. I hate them.
Okay. And the road jerseys are blue pants, white shirt with the striping on the shoulders that's similar to the home, but again, it's blue on white.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, before we run the video, Murray, you start. What'd you think of them?
I hate them. I think it's a real missed opportunity to make really cool uniforms, put out something slick that you can also have an alternate red jersey, which, you know, is the homage to the old days. I don't necessarily want to have the old Pat Patriot logo, but I would have liked a red alternate jersey. Maybe the full-time home jersey is red with white pants, white helmet, so you can occasionally use the old Pat Patriot logo. Instead, it's these terrible Captain America color rush trash that look like a bad mix of the Houston Texans uniform and the Titans uniforms. I hate them. And I think the stripes on the road with the white, I think those suck. And I'm not a fan. The good news is I never have to see Tom Brady wear them.
Maz?
I don't like him either. I mean, again, I hate those stripes on the shoulder pads. I think they look something less than, and I don't know any other way to articulate this, something less than professional. Like, I don't know if they look XFL-ish, high school-ish, college-ish, gimmicky. There's something to me about an NFL uniform that should be sharp, clean, simple. And just you look at it and you go, now that just oozes sort of professionalism and, you know, style at the same time. And these are, I look at them as kind of chintzy.
So I like them more than you guys do. I like the roads. I like the road jerseys. I think those are sharp. I like the whole road ensemble. The only thing I don't like is blue on blue. That navy blue on navy blue. I don't like it. There's not enough of a contrast. There's not enough going on there. But other than that, I don't mind the striping on the shoulders. I don't mind I just don't mind. Like, I like it. And I actually think the road jersey's kind of the whole, and I, when I say the road jersey, I think the road jersey's good, but the whole road ensemble, the whole is good. I like it. It's good, sharp, cool looking uniform. I like it. I don't like the navy blue on navy blue. Give me a little more something going on there. Have you seen the video that they posted on Instagram from the team there, Mass?
Yeah. Yes.
All right, let's roll that in there, Vinny. Let's see. Let's get a good look at the team jerseys.
Photoshop.
It's hard not to dance to this, Mass. You know what I mean?
Oh, I'm shaking it right now.
Come on, tell me you're not.
Hold up. Oh, I am a little bit.
Hold up. Pose. Hold up. Pose.
What is photo that? Shoot.
Photo shoot. Hold up. Pose. Hold up. Pose.
Photo shoot. Photo shoot. Oh, I hate that stripe on the shoulder. I hate it.
Oh, I think it's pretty good. I think it's cool. I like
it. Ticky tack.
I like it. I'll tell you what. I like it. I like the jersey. I like the jersey. At home, give me white pants. Give me white pants at home. And now we're in business. Give me white pants at home. And now I don't know if the silver helmet makes total sense.
Well, that's what I'm saying. If you had the white pants and a white helmet, so if you have the blue as your primary home, yeah, every once in a while you can bring out the red and then you can put the old logo on it. Yeah. Like, then you got something.
Yeah. Like, I might, to me, it's not the jersey itself. I like it. I like the jersey. I don't like the lack of variety with the home getup. I like the road. The whole road thing's good. The home thing, no. Give me white pants, maybe a white helmet. Maybe that's too much going on there, Murray. Maybe that would look a little too goofy, but don't give me navy blue on navy blue. Eh, feh.
I'll tell you what, the more I look at those stripes on the shoulders, you know what they look like? They look like reflectors that you wear when you go out for a jog or riding your bike. Like, that's what it feels like to me. Don't get hit.
Look at that road jersey. Look at that road jersey they're showing right now in the simulcast. The striping, I think those are sharp.
Oh, those blow.
That's a sharp look.
Them.
No, it's sharp.
They
it's good.
Blow.
It's good.
Naz, they blow. They're out of place. They blow.
To what you were saying, that they look like a high school uniform, I've now had a few people tweet this to me since we started talking about this a few minutes ago. So, apparently, I mean, now looking at it, they look like Revere High School. Look at Revere High School's uniforms. They look just like them.
Okay, so that's what I mean. They look kind of Mickey Mouse to me a little bit. And I like the color scheme. I like red, white, and blue in uniforms. I think that those colors, it has nothing to do with, you know, being patriotic or anything else. I mean, obviously, there's a theme with the Patriots. But the New York Rangers, I love that color. The red, white, and blue in uniforms looks great. Texas Rangers have it. Lots of teams have it. Because it's a color scheme that looks sharp. Those stripes on the shoulder pads, weak.
How about,
I'm telling you, they look like electrical guys out there with reflectors on, so they don't get hit by a truck.
How about the fact that they're changing uniforms, period?
So I don't see a need for it. I like, you know, but we are in the age where every time you change it, you can put out a new version and make more marketing money. So I understand how it works.
You know, I've heard people say they shouldn't change anything. They established that uniform in their championship run and all of this, and I feel like saying to you folks, like, so I hate to break it to you, despite all the winning you've done in the last two decades, you are not an iconic, hallmark, I don't know the exact adjective I'm looking for, franchise. You're not, you're not even the Red Sox, the Bruins, or the Celtics. But a timeless, classic, all-time jersey franchise, you know, never mind teams like, I was going to say, the Packers or the Yankees, or you're not, you're the freaking flying Elvis Patriots with a lousy history and sort of a joke of a history. And so, you know what? You should be changing your uniforms every so often because you're the Patriots. You're not the Celtics. You're not the Bruins. You're not the Red Sox. You're not the Packers. You're not the Yankees. You're not one of those teams.
Yeah, but the Raiders are perpetual losers, and they have maybe the most iconic uniform in the game.
So I don't understand your point.
So, I mean, the history really shouldn't matter. Like, you're saying, like, you were losers. Well, not in the last two decades. I mean, if that was the case.
His point, Murray, is the Raiders have a great history. And so, you know, the uniform does mean something to the brand.
The Raiders have a tremendous history.
Yeah.
Anyone under 30 doesn't understand it and give a rat's ass about that.
Well, but they have been they've turned into the old Patriots, really. I mean, it's flipped. But I just don't think the Patriots, it's like you don't have this sort of timeless, iconic
look. They don't have
low-going or look. You have flying Elvis.
Aesthetically, they don't. I'll give you that.
Your logo as it is cheesy. It was cheesy the second it was introduced. Flying Elvis. It's a cheesy logo. It's a cheesy sort of color scheme. And not that red, white, and blue is cheesy, but it's just kind of a cheesy franchise compared to these other teams. Like, you should be changing your uniform often. That's all I'm saying. And there's something to the fact that they changed them Belichick's first year, and now they're changing him again the first year Brady's gone. I don't think that that's a coincidence either.
Oh, me either. No,
definitely
I think that
not.
I think that, you know, they had it in mind. Look, again, now that we've heard from Tom Brady in that Stern interview, he knew he was going to leave last season, so they probably deep down knew, too. He was probably going to be gone, so it's time to change the whole look of everything if we're not going to have this iconic player here anymore.
I don't mind the changing again. And look, in this day and age, it happens all over the place, right? It's, you know, even if you do have a history, they introduce a new version of a uniform or, a color rush or whatever. I mean, just to expand the marketing possibilities. And if there's something here beyond that, in terms of metaphorically, they want to enter a new age with Brady gone, fine. I'm fine with that, too. Just give me a uniform that doesn't look Mickey Mouse like it's Revere High, as Murray said.
I don't mind it. It's, you know, but you never had a classic timeless look anyway. You're not one of those teams, or you're the most winningest team ever, but the look of your franchise and the logoing of it has never been that. So, like, you know, you haven't really lost anything, I guess is my point. Joe in New York's jumped on this. Let's grab him. Joe in New York, you're up next to Felger and Maz. Go ahead.
Hey, Felger. So with these uniforms, I'm trying to figure out whether you're just trying to have a contrarian take because everyone hates these, or whether Jimmy slipped you a lozenge before today's show in celebration of the holiday, because they're hideous. It looks like they have a European flag on their shoulders. It's ridiculous.
I don't think they're hideous. I think the road ones are really sharp. I like them. I don't like the blue on blue at home. I don't like that. I've never liked it. If you remember, there was a time they would never ever wear it. They did it for a couple of games in 2002. Most notably, there was a home game against Green Bay where they got smoked. This is when they lost four straight after winning their first three in September or October of 2002. This was a game where Kevin Faulk wouldn't jump on a fumble. It was a really bad home loss to Green Bay, and they were blue on blue. And I remember Bill saying that, you know, not publicly, but that's the last effing time we ever do this. And then it took, like, whatever, another 10, 15 years when they started doing the color rush things that they actually did it again. But now they're doing it as a permanent uniform? Oh, feh. I don't like the blue on blue. But the striping, I don't mind. And I think the road look is really nice.
I hate the blue on blue and the stripes suck. I told you, I like the color scheme. I just hate those stripes. I hate them. Oh, they are. They're ticky-tack. There's Mickey Mouse stripes.
We've got Tommy in Milton. He's got a thought on the Patriots draft. Hi, Tommy.
Hey, Mike. Listen, Mike, I got a couple of quick questions. Is he going to not sign here, Mike? Are they going to trade him before the draft?
Okay, that's one. I'll give you one more second question, quick.
All right, that's a real quick one. Two sleepers, I think Denzel Mims out of Baylor, wide receiver, fantastic. And I think Jacob Eason, I'd get him in the third round.
Okay, Tommy, noted. Put it on the Tommy Milton big board. If someone gives you, and Mike Reese reported over the weekend that the Patriots are not close on an extension for Joe Tooney. Mike Reese speculated that if they can get a second-round pick for him, they might move him. Maz, would you move Joe Tooney for a second-round pick?
Yes, absolutely, I would. And again, I'm worried about the line, but if I can get that kind of value for Tooney, particularly if it's, you know, call it middle of the second, somewhere in there, yeah, I would do it, yep. Do
you think I would, too. I mean, I'm skeptical that they can actually get a second-round pick for a guard that needs a big contract, but if they're offered a second, and I know Tooney's consistent, never misses games, I jump all over that. And I know Belichick also sucks in the second round, but it feels rebuildy, at least kind of, you know, for one season. So I would do that.
So can I amend that just quickly to tell you that whether it's Tooney or Mason, I'll move either one. Like, I don't want $25 million in guards. That to me does not make a lot of sense. I don't want to spend that kind of money at that position.
I also do wonder about his value. It's like you've got to pay him. You know, he's not going to accept anything less than $15 million a year. The tag's 14, right?
Yeah.
So he's not going to accept anything less than that on an AAV, and you're going to have to pay him over $20 million probably guaranteed in a bonus. As opposed to if you're sitting in the second round drafting the second or third best guard on the board. I don't know how many are going to go in the first round, but you know. I wouldn't give up a second round pick for any guard, short of John Hanna, for crying out loud. So I wonder how much value he has, if any.
So there's only one way I would do it. I'm not telling you that. I'm just throwing this out there. Is if they somehow think he can play left tackle. If that's what they're in, and I'm not telling you, I'm just throwing crap against the wall. But right. Then I would keep him for that money.
Okay, we continue with your thoughts. Uniforms, draft, return of sports, whatever. It's a Reentry Monday. It's presented by East Boston Savings Bank. Maz, you want to do one of those right here since we neglected to do it last hour?
Absolutely. Maybe you're looking to finance a home mortgage, a commercial real estate property. Maybe you're just looking for a free checking account. Whatever it is, visit ebsb.com. East Boston Savings Bank, getting it done since 1848.
Felger and Maz on 98.5 The Sports Hub and streaming anywhere you go. Sports Hub app. Face it, winter can wreak havoc on your parking lot. And the last thing your customers need is to dodge potholes, which might make them dodge your business altogether. Make sure they don't have bumps on the way to your door by calling U.S. Pavement. 1-800-PAVEMENT. Let U.S. Pavement smooth the road to your door. U.S. Pavement has paved the way for successful businesses all over New England since 1985. Call now and a member of their expert team will evaluate your site and give you a price that won't leave a hole in your budget. Call U.S. Pavement at 1-800-PAVEMENT or visit uspavement.com.
Hey everyone, it's Felger here for Cambridge Savings Bank, my official bank. Listen, small businesses are so important to our communities. That's why I'm excited to share CSB's new business hub with articles, tools, and resources to help you start, manage, and grow your small business.
You still have questions? Just fill out the contact form on the site to get in touch directly with the small business team. Check it out at cambridgesavings.com/hub. That's H-U-B, member FDIC.
Never be left out of the conversation.
Never, not once.
Never, not once.
Never, not once.
Felger.
Good God, man. Have some pride.
Mads.
The guy's psychotic.
98.5 Sports Hub.
Stop it.
Look, the Patriots, they have that 23rd pick in the draft. How much does a guy like Jalen Hurts make sense for a team like New England?
Makes sense, and you hear it, Nicole, when you talk to teams, that, hey, there could be some interest in Jalen Hurts with New England, Pittsburgh. That's why I gave Pittsburgh Jalen Hurts in the second round. But New England's at 23. I think that's rich. I think that's too high. I think what they would do is trade maybe out of that first round, down in the first round, maybe into the second round. They don't have a second-round pick right now. Pick up or make a pick at 23 and then come back into the second round, trade back in if they can to get Jalen Hurts. So I think he's on the radar, no question about it. From what you hear, whether it's true or not, we'll find out April 23rd to 24th, 25th. But I think when you look at Jalen Hurts, I think we all know right now, based on what I've been told, Nicole, he's going in the second round. And I think Pittsburgh, that would be their first pick overall in round two, could maybe look at Jalen Hurts in a division with Lamar Jackson and Baker Mayfield and soon to be Joe Burrow.
It's Mel Kiper on the Patriots' alleged interest in Jalen Hurts, Oklahoma. Maz, fourth round, Jalen Hurts or Jake Fromm?
Fromm.
Why?
Because I think Fromm is more of your prototypical NFL passer. And I obviously put a premium on that. I know Hurts' completion percentage, stuff like that, went up at Oklahoma. His passing numbers got better. But that's a wide-open offense, which, you know, to me the problem with evaluating the college quarterbacks now is that most of the throws are easy. They're too easy.
Oh, the windows are wide open, right?
Oh, it's huge. It's a joke. And so I just remember, Hurts is the guy that lost his job to Tua at Alabama. And so I always worry about guys like that, too. Like, you know, he wasn't good enough to play in at Alabama ahead of Tua. He got bounced out of there early, so he transferred. I just think he screams college quarterback to me. Screams it.
You got a thought?
I'm sorry. Yeah, that's why I lean Fromm.
I like him. With all those picks they have in that third round, with all the compensatory picks, even the third rounder, I would, you know, give Josh McDaniels what he's been clamoring for with an athletic quarterback. Maybe he can add a wrinkle to the offense for a year or so as, you know, you maybe bring him along and Stidham's not the guy and eventually he becomes the guy. You know, like Maz just mentioned, okay, he lost his job to Tua at Alabama, but he handled it like a pro. Like, he never bitched. You know, I think that's actually kind of a positive. He's not Tua. Tua was the better player. The numbers prove that. And granted, he benefited under Lincoln Riley's offense when he went to Oklahoma, so that's more about the scheme than anything else. But I don't know. Best case scenario, he could end up being Dak Prescott. So I think you take a shot on him.
I just, you know, I go Fromm because, again, I want the system guy. I want the pocket guy. I want the guy that's going to, you know, again, when I have a great coach and a great system, I want a system quarterback. And Hurts, to me, feels more like a runaround, big play kind of guy, but not really a system quarterback. Okay. But he might be more talented, might have more athletic ability. I defer to that other thing. But that does kind of go back to the, you know, what we were talking about a couple segments ago. Well, didn't you draft the pocket guy a couple years ago? Like, wouldn't Hurts make more sense in terms of variety or a change of pace or something different? If you're just going to go draft another Stidham, well, what's sort of the point? Going back to that point, Maz.
Okay, so look, that I get. Now you're talking about stylistically two different quarterbacks, which, by the way, I'm not sure that Fromm and Stidham are all that similar. I mean, I'm not saying that they're complete opposites, but Stidham can move. I'm not sure Fromm really moves all that much. So I just look at the whole experience completely differently than other people do. So you want to tell me you like, you know, you want to draft different styles, fine. I'm telling you that even if you draft the same style, there's no guarantee you're getting the same player. That I just think that the variables involved in trying to hit at that position, particularly with Bill Belichick as the coach, and I say that as he's looking for an exceptional level of aptitude there. I think you take multiple cracks at it. What's the worst thing that happens? You get two guys who can play and then you trade one? Like, that's not a bad thing either.
Okay, back to your thoughts. Our buddies in Quincy. Tom, how you doing, Tom?
Hey, what's up, guys? Hey, Mike, with every passing day, with all these rumors that come out, it just becomes like so more painfully clear that they effed up this Brady thing so bad, right? So, because the whole thing was like, all right, you know, I think they really thought he was coming back and that he'd buckle and fold and say, all right, I'll take your crap deal and stay. And when he didn't, You got Stidham, and I think they should ride with Stidham. I don't like the Tua thing at all. I don't think they don't even play the game this kid plays, to be honest with you. And I kind of like channel my inner Tony Maz when I think of Tua, because I'm like, Tua in, Tom and Quincy out. Like, I don't want him, man. I don't want him. Like, I don't – he strikes me as, like, you know, just a college guy, flashy guy. I mean, I remember when I was a kid, you had, like, Major Harris and Tony Rice and that type of Bo Morgan at Air Force, all that. Like, he strikes me as one of those guys.
So this guy –
I don't want
– Yeah, no, I mean, I understand. I hear exactly what you're saying. Tua is supposed to be a lot more accurate. He's supposed to be a quick release, accurate in the short stuff kind of quarterback. Fits him in some ways, Maz. He's supposed to.
Well, so that's the one thing I keep hearing over and over about Tua that, you know, again, I would stay away. But if you were to tell me, no, the accuracy is off the charts, which is what I keep hearing, that to me is an endearing and enticing thing.
Right.
Like, that's the whole point, right? That's the whole game. And so that's the one thing that makes me say maybe I'm wrong about Tua is the accuracy if those reports are all right.
Mike in Nashua on the return of sports. Hi, Michael.
Yeah, so first of all, you got to go with the red and white Pat the Patriot over the Flying Elvis 7 days a week. But as far as going back to sports and letting fans in the stadium, you can't do it until it's full bore, you know, a full stadium. Trying to, you know, let so many fans in and expecting, serving them alcohol, letting them, expecting them to be on the honor system as far as keeping their distance and everything, not going to work. So,
it feels like a massive undertaking, but just somebody cut you off and then ask, you know, so a restaurant, I mean, let's say they come back and they don't let restaurants go to full capacity. They don't want you shoulder to shoulder. So, you know, you can only have a third of the customers in your restaurant. Should we tell the restaurants just to shut it down until you can go full capacity? Or should that restaurant owner be able to earn whatever he can earn and make whatever he can make and open up whatever part of his business is allowed to open up? Should we just tell the whole world we're just going to stay in our house? Going to stay in our house, doors locked, sealed up until everything is back to normal. Is that what we're going to do?
Or you know, my answer on that. I mean, think this idea of all or nothing to me is preposterous.
Right. And so, but I do think, though, with the sports stuff and, you know, we read Spears' column, you guys were talking about it earlier. It's just, for me, when I hear that, I'm like, okay, then open it up, but don't let the fans in. Because I just think that you're asking for chaos. You're adding booze to the paranoia. You're asking people to sit 4 or 5 seats away. It's just, it sounds too chaotic. So bring sports back, but for the time being, no fans.
Well, but here's what I don't get. It's like, well, if you don't want to be a part of that, don't go. You don't have to go. You're not. This isn't communist China. You're not under gunpoint to go somewhere, Murray. So if you don't want to go, don't go. Those who want to go, go. And if the teams want to invest and go through the incredible logistical rigmarole that it feels like it's going to take, but if they want to do it because it makes sense to them business-wise, why shouldn't they be allowed to do it?
Well, they should
be. Well,
yeah, go ahead, Murray.
It's well within their right. And that's, you know, if it does come down to that, it should just be on the personal responsibility of the person. And if that's the case, you know, all I'm weighing is the inconvenience factor. Granted, I'm still paranoid about the bug, but in that case, I am not going. I'll go to the restaurant. You want to take my temperature before I sit down and have a few drinks and a meal? Fine, I can live with that. But to wait in that kind of crazy line, 5, 6 seats away, whatever it's going to take to go take a leak, I'm good. I'm not going. I'll watch it at home.
But that's fine. Are you saying they shouldn't open it up to the people who are willing to do that?
No, not at all. I just, overall, I would think if they are going to bring sports back, though, I think it might be easier to do it without the fans, because this just sounds crazy.
Well, so that's the way it's going to be at the beginning, for sure, right? I think part of the problem is here is people just can't wrap their heads around it. They're just like, we're going to do it that way? Well, that doesn't make any sense. That's not the way we've done it, because they completely discount the upheaval factor of what this thing has done to society. And so they look at it and say, oh, no, when it's all over, we're just going to go back to doing things the way we did them. And I don't think it's going to work that way.
I mean, again, right. So 25 years ago, if you said, well, when you go to your airplane, you have to take off your belt and your shoes, and you can't have a toothpaste tube that's greater than 8 ounces or whatever, you know, all these forkakta rules are. If we had said that to people in 1995, they'd go, no way, I'm not doing that. I'm not doing that. No way. There's no way you'll ever. No. Well, now you do it. Nope. Now you do it. So when you go in these stadiums, that's right. No more community pool at the Jacksonville Jaguars game. That hot tub in center field in Arizona, gone. And that's just going to be the new normal.
And so look, you know, again, Mike, I'm not telling you anything you don't already know. And I think that this reality is dawning on people as we move further and further along. But eventually we're going to look at this thing and say the world changed forever. You know, there are places in the world where they've already experienced epidemics and they have adjusted accordingly. I mean, we did all this discussion that we had about Korea early on in the process and how ready they were for the testing because they had endured, among other things, SARS. The next time this comes around, oh, we're going to be ready for it or more ready for it than we were this time.
I mean, I hope it all goes back to normal. I hope it's all like in 2 years, everything is exactly as it was. That's what we all hope. But in the meantime, if a business can open up at half capacity and stay afloat, should they be allowed to open at half capacity? And if that's the case, and a team wants to do the same thing in their stadium, why shouldn't they be allowed to do that? If they're willing to go through all the things that it takes to do it and the people are willing to go. Like, why would you say no? I don't understand how that's... If everyone's compliant and everyone's a willing participant, what's... I don't understand the harm. I don't get it. I don't.
No, I think you're taking it from what I was saying. Like, I don't look at it as harm. I just think they're going to save themselves a lot of headaches if they just do it with just, you know, the athletes and those that work for the teams for a while.
And that may be true. As opposed to, you know, lines that stretch to Faneuil Hall and four different entrance times per your section and two rows between people and families of four can sit together. But then we have to have a radius of 20 feet and we have to stagger the beer lines and stagger the bathroom lines. And we have to wipe down every armrest, elevator button, escalator handle. Like if they do all that legwork and say, well, you know, at the end of the day, this isn't smart business for us. It's going to cost too much money to button everything down, but let's not do it. That's fine. But if they decide to do it and they decide it does make sense and people want to go, I don't know why you would, you know, say don't go. I don't get it. So we continue with this conversation. We have to throw for the big board. Big board only has three positions left. Three pretty big ones for this team. Tight end, receiver, and quarterback.
Huge.
Okay, so we'll do tight ends today. That's a big one. We're going to throw for tight ends next on the big board, and we'll continue with your thoughts, so don't go anywhere. Here's an update from Murray.
Face it, winter can wreak havoc on your parking lot, and the last thing your customers need is to dodge potholes, which might make them dodge your business altogether. Make sure they don't have bumps on the way to your door by calling U.S. Pavement, 1-800-PAVEMENT. Let U.S. Pavement smooth the road to your door. U.S. Pavement has paved the way for successful businesses all over New England since 1985. Call now, and a member of their expert team will evaluate your site and give you a price that won't leave a hole in your budget. Call U.S. Pavement at 1-800-PAVEMENT or visit uspavement.com.
Hey everyone, it's Felger here for Cambridge Savings Bank, my official bank. Listen, small businesses are so important to our communities. That's why I'm excited to share CSB's new business hub with articles, tools, and resources to help you start, manage, and grow your small business. Still have questions? Just fill out the contact form on the site to get in touch directly with the small business team. Check it out at cambridgesavings.com/hub. That's H-U-B, member FDIC.
Felger and Maz on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Follow these guys on Twitter at Felger and Maz.
All right, it's time for the big board. Getting real now, nut cutting time. Gotta say, Maz, our board selection so far this year, pretty crappy.
They blow.
I mean,
a lot of little guys.
Oh my god, we're gonna crush the 6-4 and under league, but it's time to step up the talent level with some of our picks.
If the Patriots draft anything that's on that board or a combination of it, they're gonna actually look like the Revere High football team.
If there's a football god listening, please let someone hit the kid from Missouri. Please. That's
okay. Well,
because I just want you to have to try to pronounce the name.
I can already see it. Oh, yeah. I'm not even going to try. All right. Billy Lanny, our director of communications, standing up here. I got the draft magazine on the backside of this boogie board. We're going to throw there's only two full open pages. So we'll throw one on the first page, two on the second and third. Because let's face it, there's probably going to be some crappy, you know, fifth round selection. But go ahead, Billy. First page. This is the big one right here. Number six.
Yeah, the throw was hot.
Yeah.
That was
a tight end.
Thaddeus Moss.
Oh, Randy Moss is good.
Yeah. Thaddeus Moss.
Another Moss for you to hate, Mike.
Put him on the board. Okay.
There we go.
Of course, just my luck. Go ahead, Billy. Chuck it. Okay, that almost hit my finger. Oh, you got him. You got him. Number 10.
They get him. Albert O.
Albert Akwugbanum. Akwugbanum. Akwugbanum.
Oh, that's pretty good. Akwugbanum.
Akwugbanum. Akwugbanum.
Akwugbanum.
Akwugbanum. Akwugbanum.
Akwugbanum.
Albert.
Love it.
Akwugbanum. Okay. There's
he's
two.
He's 6'6".
Okay. He's a moose.
Okay, good, good. One more, Billy. Go ahead. Chuck it. Number 9. Very good. That would be Colby Parkinson.
Yeah, that doesn't sound optimistic.
Okay, so anyway, let's go in order of which we hit. Thaddeus Moss, LSU. He is, yes, the son of Randy Moss. Rand State. What did Moss used to say? Anyway.
Yeah.
Anyway, strengths. Soft hands and competitiveness of his dad. Oh, that's great. His dad was one of the biggest dogs in pro sports. What do you mean competitiveness of his dad? Oh, I feel like chucking this magazine across the... His dad's competitiveness sucked. His dad's... as soon as it got tough, his dad quit. What are you talking about, his dad's competitiveness? His dad... If his dad was more competitive, maybe he would have won something. Ah, feh. Like that, feh. Like that annoys me. Like his dad's competitive. Whee! The competitiveness of Randy Moss is one of the least competitive guys I've ever seen. What are you talking about?
This kid's a mid-round pick, right? He's nothing better than that.
Third or fourth, something around there.
So this magazine has him third or fourth. But it's like, oh, God, that's just, oh. Well, I can't trust the magazine at all. His dad's competitiveness? Well, then you're drafting a dog. He has the soft hands and competitiveness of his dad, but sports a completely different frame and game than his tall, lanky father with a compact, well-distributed musculature. He wins with quickness and toughness rather than straight line speed. Good body control to slip through traffic at the line of scrimmage when jammed. He's 6'3", 250, by the way. So he does. He looks a little bit more like Wiggy than he does his father.
He does.
Right. Yeah. Go ahead.
Weaknesses. Served as a complementary threat on an offense loaded with NFL talent. Possesses just average size for the position and, while athletic, is not special in that regard. Lacking sudden acceleration off the line, even when split out wide. He needs to do a better job of keeping both hands wrapped securely around the football, including when leaping over defenders. Okay, so anyway, Thaddeus Moss, Randy Moss's kid, put him on the board. You have a thought, guys?
He's got no wheels. Clearly, he got his mother's speed.
I liked him. I mean, he could be more of like a Aaron Hernandez-y type on the Patriots offense. So, and I love Randy Moss, even though you didn't. I know he could dog it at times. So, I don't know. I like the bloodline. I'm into it.
Sounds like a backup to me.
The whole Belichick kid thing, you know, player's kid, it usually works out. It's good. Even someone like Randy Moss, it usually works out. Just don't tell me he's got his father's competitiveness. Because if he has his father's competitiveness, that's a bad thing, not a good thing. God. Keep it real, just a little bit. Try and keep it real. That's all I ask. Cody Parkinson, Stanford, projected in the site. This is according to this magazine, even a higher prospect. Strengths: he boasts an intriguing frame. Again, 6'6", 245. Boasts an intriguing frame with excellent height, long limbs, and potential to gain significantly more mass. Surprisingly quick off the snap, given his size, mass showing light feet and easy acceleration.
He's light on his feet.
Best attribute is his ball skills, where Parkinson uses his condor-like wingspan. This is the second or third guy we've hit who's got condor-like wingspan to provide a huge catch radius. Parkinson shows good timing and body control in contested situations, as well as strong, sticky hands. Consistently catches the ball at its highest point. Like it. Weaknesses. Has some tweener traits, including a high-cut frame. Again, what the hell does that mean?
He's a basketball player, basically.
High-cut frame? But no, it's just like, specifically, what does that mean?
He's built like the letter V.
High-cut frame.
Yeah.
And string beans for legs that make it difficult for him to play with the pad level and power necessary to provide much as a frontline blocker.
He's got to work on his squats.
Parkinson accelerates smoothly but lacks the juice to frighten NFL corners over the top, allowing them to sit on short and intermediate routes. Anyway, Colby Parkinson put him on the board.
I don't know about you guys. I worry about NFL players with skinny legs, particularly if they play anywhere near the line.
Finally, Albert Ogukwugimbum. Give it to me one more time.
Okuwebunam, as I believe how you say it.
Okuwebunam. Albert Okuwebunam. It's a very cool name.
Can we just call him Giannis?
When we actually get there, Okuwebunam. He's 6'5", 255, out of Missouri. This magazine projects him in the second round. Seemingly born to play tight end. That's cool.
Oh, I like that.
Has an ideal frame, including terrific height, broad shoulders, long arms, and an athletic musculature. Again, with the musculature.
Glide, he's low cut.
Glides off the line and into his route, showing above average acceleration for a tight end his size, including the speed to challenge the seam. Big, soft mitts with good strength in his fingers to snatch hot passes.
Oh, you got to be a love to do that.
How do you think they determine the strength of the fingers versus the hand? Like, we've heard a lot about the heavy hands in this magazine and the strong hands. How does he have strong fingers?
Handshake.
Big, soft mitts with good strength in his fingers to snatch hot passes, along with good timing on his leaps and impressive body control.
Seriously, that gets me aroused just talking about it.
I was going to say, I got a little excited.
Can he use those mitts to grab hot asses?
Seriously. I love
with the strong fingers.
Soft mitts really, to snatch hot passes.
Really just snatch it with those strong fingies. Weakness. His weaknesses. A big man who plays smaller than he should.
Uh-oh. Can't block.
Lacking the aggressive physical nature as a blocker and after the catch that his size suggests. Routes lack precision. Often satisfied with simply rounding off breaks rather than sinking his hips and firing out of his cuts to generate real separation. He's a hip sinker.
Seriously, this guy's bio is like rated, PG-13 for crying out loud.
I'm sorry, he doesn't sink his hips. What you want to do is sink your hips and fire out of cuts. Instead, he just sort of lollygags it out there.
Apparently, he is a bad blocker. It says, but I think he can be taught that.
Yeah, Mass. I don't think any college tight end knows how to block anymore.
Galloping strides eat up yardage if he catches the ball in motion, but does not show the instant acceleration to be a real yak threat when he gets it flat-footed. Okay, put him on the board either way. I wonder how these scouts know so much to write these things.
Okuwebunam? Is that how you pronounce it?
Okuwebunam.
Okuwebunam. Great name. Okuwebunam. Colby Parkinson and Moss's kid with the competitiveness of his father, says the magazine. Oh, great. Thaddeus Moss, put him on the board. We have more of your thoughts on everything so far today. The Pats trading up for Tua, all the quarterback rumors in general, the return of sports. We did the whole first hour on that. The Patriots' new uniforms are on the board. We can talk about Okuwebunam and the tight ends we just put on the board and the Michael Jordan documentary from last night, but really as it relates to what's going on here in New England. I know Maz and Murray have a take on this. We'll get to that right after this.
It's Felger and Maz on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Follow these guys on Twitter at Felger and Maz.
Face it, winter can wreak havoc on your parking lot. And the last thing your customers need is to dodge potholes, which might make them dodge your business altogether. Make sure they don't have bumps on the way to your door by calling U.S. Pavement. 1-800-PAVEMENT. Let U.S. Pavement smooth the road to your door. U.S. Pavement has paved the way for successful businesses all over New England since 1985. Call now and a member of their expert team will evaluate your site and give you a price that won't leave a hole in your budget. Call U.S. Pavement at 1-800-PAVEMENT or visit uspavement.com.
Hey everyone, it's Felger here for Cambridge Savings Bank, my official bank. Listen, small businesses are so important to our communities. That's why I'm excited to share CSB's new business hub with articles, tools, and resources to help you start, manage, and grow your small business. You still have questions? Just fill out the contact form on the site to get in touch directly with the small business team. Check it out at cambridgesavings.com/hub. That's H-U-B, member FDIC.
Mike Felger, Tony Maserati, making your afternoon commute better.
Throw some, Felger. How about a mea culpa? You are wrong. Running backs do matter.
Or worse.
Yeah, I wouldn't pay him.
On 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Michael, obviously, in the wake of this incredible celebration, there'll be some very difficult business decisions.
We're entitled to defend what we have until we lose it. If we lose it, then you look at it and you say, okay, let's change. Let's just go through a rebuilding. No one's guaranteeing rebuilding is going to be 2 or 3, 4 or 5 years. Cubs have been rebuilding for 42 years. If you want to look at this from a business thing, have a sense of respect for the people who have laid the groundwork so that you can be a profitable organization.
From the Jordan documentary on ESPN last night, which gave Maz a thought. Yes, Anthony.
Well, so to me, it was hard to not watch that thing last night and not immediately think of the Patriots. There are a few athletes in sports who deserve to be mentioned in the same breath as Tom Brady anymore. And Michael Jordan's one of them. And really, it's the other way around, right? Jordan is sort of the standard because he was first. But to me, watching that thing last night, one of the first things that popped into my head was, boy, I feel like I'm doing the whole, you know, Deflategate thing or the whole Palace Q all over again.
Why?
Because Jordan was upset at management and ownership for the way they were conducting business. They wanted to take the team apart. They wanted to start to rebuild. And it's not a perfect apples to apples with Brady. But effectively, what the Patriots told him is, we're not going to commit to a 43-year-old quarterback because we, as an organization, have to turn the page. So, and again, and I'm in agreement with the Patriots on that philosophy. But on some level, there was a parallel to be made to Jordan there and the power struggle between dominant personalities that existed in the Bulls organization at that time, the great player Jordan or Brady. And in the case of the Bulls, the GM, Jerry Krause. In the case of the Patriots, the GM/coach, Bill Belichick. And so to me, it was, again, it sort of tells you that inevitably all those dynasties end, and more often than not, they end in the same way. And I'm just wondering if maybe there's something to be learned, having lived through the Brady thing. And then, you know, when we watch this whole Jordan thing, I think there are going
to
be...
What's to learn?
Yeah.
Well, no,
well, I think ultimately that ego starts to get in the way, inevitably. And with the Bulls, it happened in an eight-year period. They won 6 titles in 8 years. But you can even hear Jordan say there at the end that, you know, have respect for the people that turned this into a valuable franchise and an absolute force and power. And I think that, you know, I heard him say that, and I'm thinking this is Mike Vrabel talking about Patriot Place. Brady was obviously a building block or the building block for that whole thing. And to me, there are parallels to be drawn.
Yeah, I kind of felt the same thing. It wasn't my biggest takeaway from watching it, but Jordan says it in one of these first 2 episodes. It's about the players. And, yeah, the coaches matter more in the NFL, and Belichick's legacy is undeniable. But I also think it could be a word of caution for Belichick and ownership for how that they've dealt with Brady here these last few years. It's ultimately about the players, and the fans, I think, realize that more and more. And looking at this last night, it's like, oh, man, why would they ever have tried to rip this apart? And it's because guys like Jerry Krause, then the GM, you know, they get bitter because they feel like they're just as important as the run of success as the guys on the floor. And that's ridiculous. Like, yeah, he made some good moves and some bold moves to, you know, change that team and bring in guys like Horace Grant at one point. But, dude, like, you're not as responsible for the success as Michael Jordan or Scottie Pippen. You're just not. You're delusional if you think that.
And Mike, just quickly to me, like, you know, the NFL and the NBA are very, very different.
Oh, my God, so different.
So they're extremely different, but the sentiments are the same.
Yeah.
Right? In other words, Krause feels what Belichick feels. No, it's more about the organization and the system. Or at least he's portrayed as feeling that. Where just Brady says, no, I'm ultimately the one that throws the pass. Just like Jordan says, I'm the one that takes the shot. And I think that even in the great organizations, maybe especially in the great organizations, there's a divide there between the guys who play and the people who make the decisions, and there's a distrust that goes along with that. And that was apparent in the Bulls, and we're only a couple of episodes into the thing.
So I just think that they're so different that it's not applicable. I mean, it is from a personality standpoint, man.
A human standpoint.
Yeah, you know, from a human standpoint, I obviously see what you're driving at, and I think there's some of those things are at play. I think ego definitely played into Brady Belichick's divorce, which is too bad. And maybe we'll have our specials in 20 years and we'll look back and we'll say their egos got in the way. But in the NBA, you can't win without the best players. You can't. You just can't. In the NFL, you kind of can. You kind of can. I would say the NFL and hockey are sort of like that, where you can, you know, you can coach it up, or you can effort it up, or you can whatever. Like, there's just, I mean, the NFL has this incredible stat, and I still think it's alive. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. What's the last NFL MVP to win the Super Bowl? Isn't it like Kurt Warner in 1999 or something like that?
Yeah.
Where in the NBA, it's like the MVP wins it all. It's you know, that guy wins. So any basketball executive or coach who says it's the system or the organization is a freaking moron in basketball. In football, there's something to it. There is something to it. I think it is a culture and coaching and program. I think that's a huge thing in that sport. I do.
Well, and look, again, the team building thing is totally different in the two sports. I mean, it's you really
there
can't
is no
get
team building in the NBA. You get two players and you're done.
There isn't. I mean, there's, you know, that like they talk about the trade that Jerry Krause made to get Scottie Pippen, and, you know, who was a relative unknown in the draft at the time because he played at a small college, et cetera, et cetera. So there were little moves like that. And I say little, like that ended up being a big one for them, just like Red trading for Kevin McHale and Robert Parrish in the same trade. But at the end of the day, to me, the interesting part again is the human part of it. How they were wary of one another, and the, you know, on some level, I think that tension and that friction is healthy, but it can get to a point where it becomes resentment. And I think that that's what happens at the end in these things, is it becomes resentment. And the other thing is, just quickly, because I know, I think Murray feels the same way. If I were to ever sit at a dinner table with Michael Jordan and he said, "Hey, listen, I'll be right back. I got to run to the restroom." You know what I would say? "Can I come and watch?" Like, I am captivated and just riveted with everything Jordan does.
Say what?
I'm joking. Like, you can have Jordan.
Maz's dirty way of saying he loved Jordan. And I'm the same way. I loved him. I loved watching that run of dominance. That's why I'm like into this thing so much. They could have ran all 10 last night. I would have stayed up till 5 in the morning.
Go ahead, Maz, on your bathroom analogy.
Well, so no, I'm just telling you, I could watch Jordan pick his nose, and then you put it on TV, and I'll watch all 3 hours of it.
There you go.
I mean, I am completely captivated by the guy. And so I don't know if you've dug into the thing or not.
I watched a little bit. I mean, if you want my thought, I was never that interested. I was never that interested in the Bulls or him. I mean, I think he's the greatest of all time. I think he's by far the best. His competitiveness is, I find, intriguing. But the team bored me. I thought it was a horrible era of the NBA. I was never that interested in the Bulls. I think it was a better league before and became a better league after. And so I'm not super captivated. I sort of checked in and out of the thing last night. There was one part that I was interested, where he talked about when he was a young NBA player and, you know, all his teammates were partying, and he'd go into a room and there'd be lines over here and the dope smokers over here and the women over there. And I didn't do any of that at the time. And they would cut to him in real time talking about it. And there he is with a giant glass of scotch and a cigar next to him, you know, on the chair. And he was, to his credit, he said, you know, "I didn't drink at the time."
Yeah.
And so the only thing I'm really interested in is someone really doing a deep dive on his gambling problems and his problems, period. Because I think the guy is filthy. I do. I think he's filthy.
And so I think that allegedly some of that is coming. But, well, you know, if you're into the to me, again, watching it, I think he and Brady are similar personality types, and that's the part I took out of it.
Yeah, so as a young guy, when he first came into the league, his competitiveness and wanted to rip your throat out, like, that I buy 100%. That intrigues me sort of in the abstract. I think that's what makes the greats the greats. It's not just pure talent. There's some sort of drive and ethic there to him, work ethic, competitiveness that is all there. And I all knew about him, and I knew about. It's just I did not find that team compelling, that era of basketball compelling. So I'm not front and center with it. The only thing I'm front and center, the part that interests me the most is what David Stern did with him and his gambling problem and the de facto suspension that was levied against him and how he brought him back and why he brought him back, meaning Stern brought Jordan back. And unless they're going to take a real look at his gambling problems, I'm really not that interested.
Yeah, and I want that. I think everyone wants that. And I just don't know if we're going to end up getting it because, again, it's an ESPN production. ESPN's basically a partner with the NBA. This thing last night already is featuring a lot of David Stern. And how close he was, you know, shows him buddy-buddy with Jordan at one point when they go over to Paris.
For good reason, because Stern protected him.
Yeah, it's got Obama in it. It's got Clinton in it. It's like, okay, are we going to get the real story here? So I have my doubts. But I did enjoy it. I guess, I mean, so for me, like at that point when they were winning that last three-peat, I'm in my late teens, early 20s, so like I just watched the playoff games or whatever. And I was wrapped up into what you're usually wrapped up in that age. It's like booze and trying to find someone to do me. So I never really knew a lot of the infighting. And I definitely didn't know that Jordan's bitterness towards Krause started in his second year when he broke his foot. And they're trying to manage his minutes and tank for a better draft pick. Like, that was real interesting to me.
So anyway, you can weigh in on that, you know, as it relates to the Patriots as well, or anything on the special if you want. We'll reset the draft, the latest draft rumblings on the Patriots are kind of major, and we'll get your thoughts on them at 617-779-0985. First, there's an update from Murray. It takes 90 seconds. There are no commercials here.
Face it, winter can wreak havoc on your parking lot. And the last thing your customers need is to dodge potholes, which might make them dodge your business altogether. Make sure they don't have bumps on the way to your door by calling U.S. Pavement. 1-800-PAVEMENT. Let U.S. Pavement smooth the road to your door. U.S. Pavement has paved the way for successful businesses all over New England since 1985. Call now and a member of their expert team will evaluate your site and give you a price that won't leave a hole in your budget. Call U.S. Pavement at 1-800-PAVEMENT or visit uspavement.com.
Hey everyone, it's Felger here. Now, you know the Sports Hub is the place to go for everything Boston sports. Well, I'd like to introduce you to another hub, the new Business Hub from Cambridge Savings Bank. It's your one-stop shop for articles, tools, resources, and banking solutions that can help you start, manage, and grow your small business. It's just the latest way CSB is supporting small businesses. Check it out at cambridgesavings.com/hub. That's H-U-B. They're member FDIC.
Hey, it's Maz. Since 1928, Rodenizer Home Services has been your trusted local experts for all your plumbing needs. From bathroom and kitchen fixtures to leaking pipes and water heaters, Rodenizer offers you the higher standards of professionalism. When you have questions, Rodenizer has answers, all backed by their 100% customer satisfaction guarantee. Their motto is simple: nice people, great service. So experience the difference today with Rodenizer Home Services. Visit Rodenizer.com to schedule today.